Good morning. Nice to have you all here. All right. First case of the day is Donald Greeno versus George Daly. It's appeal number 014119. And Miss Trueblood, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. The district court erred when it granted summary judgment to the defendants. The court found that there was no objective evidence that Donald Greeno had a serious medical condition until the spring of 1997, and that prior to then, his complaints had not been ignored. But the record shows that the defendants had objective evidence of Mr. Greeno's ulcer as early as August 1995. The record also shows that in the face of that substantial risk to Mr. Greeno's health, they continued treatment that they knew to be ineffective, they prescribed medications that they knew to be potentially harmful, and when they did find treatment that worked, they refused to prescribe it. Under this court's 2000 decision in Sherrod, that is more than enough evidence to go to the jury.
Is a part of the problem, do you think, Ms. Trueblood, that the prison medical staff started to think of Mr. Greeno as sort of the boy who cried wolf? Of course, you know, we know that he was not crying wolf. He had serious medical condition. But is it ever valid for the prison officials to look more dubiously at requests for medical care from inmates who might be considered to be chronic complainers? In other words, do they have to offer every test that is requested by those frequent complainers?
In this case, the answer is no. But in this case, the court doesn't have to decide that. In this case, the defendants had objective evidence of Mr. Greeno's serious medical need early on in this timeline. They knew as early as August 1995 that Mr. Greeno could be suffering from an ulcer. And in fact, the record actually shows that Defendant Lauren wrote that they needed to rule out an ulcer at that date. That information was available to all the defendants in the medical record for the rest of that timeline. Yet they refused to confirm or treat that ulcer for nearly 2 years. The testing and treatment that Mr. Greeno required was relatively simple, and the defendants just simply refused to provide it. Instead, they provided him with medications that they knew to be ineffective. They provided him with pain medication for his back that was potentially harmful, and they knew this. Citations in the record show that they knew that ibuprofen did aggravate his symptoms. They recorded it in his medical record, and in fact, when they provided it to him, they had Defendant Nordahl provided him with a note that said, "This is all that is available to you. Use with caution and tell us if you have any bleeding." The defendants were not required to provide Mr. Greeno with any testing. That was unreasonable, but it's clear that they themselves believed that Mr. Greeno was suffering from a serious medical condition based on their own medical records. This court in Sherrod reversed summary judgment for the defendants because the defendants had refused to confirm and treat appendicitis that they suspected was causing the plaintiff's pain. In this case, Defendant Lauren believed that Mr. Greeno was possibly suffering from an ulcer. He wrote it twice in his medical record. And the same thing happened here, despite the fact that they knew he was probably suffering from an ulcer. They refused to confirm the ulcer or treat it at that point.
Could I focus a little bit on which Mr. Greeno has sued a lot of different people. And it seems to me the arguments you're making have more traction against some of the defendants than the others. Now, I take it even Mr. Greeno concedes that Mr. Ridgely is not in the case anymore. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And also, there were some others. Mr. Kingston doesn't seem to be involved.
That's also correct, yes.
Okay, so those two are out. Jenkins, what's her? Answer me what Mr. Sullivan, Mr. Miller, Ms. Zunker, and Ms. Jenkins are doing still in this case.
Zunker, Miller, Jenkins, and Sullivan.
Mm-hmm.
Those defendants were mostly involved in Mr. Greeno's inmate complaint process. They were responsible for reviewing and responding to Mr. Greeno's inmate complaints.
But why is it, it's obviously a very different kind of claim than saying there he is, throwing up blood-tinged mucus or something and not medically treating him. The processing of the complaint, what exactly is deliberately indifferent or a violation of the Eighth Amendment, or is it a due process claim? What's the problem here?
Mr. Greeno's Section 1983 claim against them is based on the fact that after he failed to receive effective, adequate treatment from the medical care providers, he filed inmate complaints with the administrative staff.
Right.
Those were reviewed by the examiners and the appeal examiners. And this court has held in Black and Smith that the personal responsibility requirement of Section 1983 is satisfied if the conduct causing the constitutional deprivation occurs with their knowledge and consent.
Right, but I'm just thinking, here's somebody who's responsible for investigating a complaint. Presumably they get, the medical department's file or in some fashion, look at it. Whether they grant it or whether they deny it or whether they spend 20 minutes investigating it or three, it's a hard line to draw to say that there's a constitutional violation in the investigation as opposed to having Mr. Greeno focus on the medical treatment part of his claim. I don't know. If it seems to me if these people aren't really properly in the case, they deserve to be dismissed. If they are properly in the case, I would like to know why. And I guess it's because you think their failure to investigate somehow indirectly led to the bad care?
Correct. They had the power through their investigation and their position as inmate complaint examiners to rectify Mr. Greeno's medical care situation.
So, following up on Judge Wood, is it your view that only Ridgely should have been dismissed?
Correct.
Only?
Correct.
It seems to me that Judge Shabazz seemed to completely ignore the finding of our court that Mr. Greeno's stated cause of action against all of the defendants, including the unserved defendants in this case. And so just bottom line, what you are saying is only Ridgely is gone.
Correct.
Okay.
Ridgely was involved in Mr. Greeno's constipation complaint, and that part of his complaint was dropped, and so he should have been properly dismissed at that point. The other defendants remain liable for his constitutional deprivation based on their lack of medical treatment.
Seems to me the main issue here is subjective, and what is the evidence of intent with respect to A, the medical people, and B, the processors of the grievances, and particularly the latter? Why have they violated the Eighth Amendment?
The medical care providers and the inmate complaint examiner group of defendants both acted with deliberate indifference towards Mr. Greeno's serious medical need. We know that he was suffering from a serious medical need that's largely undisputed. He was suffering from an ulcer and other symptoms that would have revealed that. The defendants, on a subjective component, they were clearly aware of facts from which they could draw the inference that a substantial risk of harm existed. And we know that because, first and foremost, in August of 1995, Dr. Lorne wrote in the record that they needed to rule out a possible ulcer. And 2 months after that, he still wrote that Mr. Greeno had a possible ulcer, yet none of the defendants took any action to confirm or treat that ulcer.
Every time somebody says possible ulcer, and if you don't test for that immediately, is that a violation of the Eighth Amendment?
In this case, the defendant Lauren wrote that they needed to rule out an ulcer. And at that point, yes, they should have conducted the proper testing and treatment for that ulcer. This court's decision in Sherrod supports that because there, the defendants, just based on the inmate's complaints, wrote that they should rule out appendicitis. They did nothing for approximately 2 weeks except provide him with pain medication and an enema. And while the pain medication did provide some relief, the other treatment did nothing. This court found that the fact that they wrote rule out appendicitis showed that they knew that there was a substantial risk of harm. And that a jury could understand those notations to mean that sufficient testing should be performed to rule out appendicitis as a cause of the inmate's pain. Here we have the same situation. This case should go to the jury because there is a question of fact with regard to when the defendants knew of the substantial risk of an ulcer. In this case, it appears from the record that it was as early as August 1995, yet the defendants say that there was no objective evidence until April 1997 when the endoscopy revealed that ulcer. That contention is inconsistent with the record, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense in light of the fact that they were aware that he could have an ulcer 2 years earlier.
What was the evidence of the ulcer in 95?
The record is not entirely clear what Mr. Greeno's symptoms were that caused Dr. Lauren to write that they needed to rule out an ulcer. That's one of the reasons that Mr. Greeno should have been appointed counsel at the summary judgment stage. However, it is clear that at that point, Mr. Greeno was suffering from a severe pain and vomiting. His symptoms were not completely controlled by the medications that they gave him, including Maalox and Tagamet. And at that time, they also knew that Mr. Greeno's had a family history of ulcers. That was also written in the record at that time. As time progressed, they refused to test or treat the ulcer. Instead, they just basically documented his worsening condition.
Well, I thought you were also... wasn't he also complaining about the diet? He was asking for a bland diet, was being told they didn't have one.
That's correct. At several, many points in Mr. Greeno's long timeline of deliberate indifference, he requested a bland diet that he saw being given to other inmates, and that is one of the ways they acted with reckless disregard for his medical condition, by recognizing that he had this risk of an ulcer, refusing to provide him both with ulcer medication or ulcer confirmatory procedures. They also refused to provide him with that bland diet, and instead they did to simply tell him, you can eat bread and potatoes in the dining hall, but for some reason they just refused to prescribe him the bland diet that was available to other inmates. I see that in my rebuttal time. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Dawson.
Good morning. May it please the court. Let me start out by respectfully but firmly disagreeing with counsel for Mr. Greeno in suggesting that there was objective evidence of an ulcer in August of 95. There was none. In August of 95, Mr. Greeno was diagnosed with chronic esophagitis. That is not the same as an ulcer. In other words, chronic heartburn. He was already taking Maalox. He was already being instructed with regard to the foods he should eat. The record shows, and we've been talking about the reference to Dr. Loren, and we refer to it in our second brief on page 5, that an assessment of Mr. Greeno's situation was done. Possible ulcer was suggested for further review and examination.
But here's the problem, Mr. Dawson. If one of us, any of us, goes to a physician with these complaints, an intelligent and honorable physician orders an endoscopy. Now, if this man had had an endoscopy at that point, none of us would be here. None of us would
Your Honor,
spending years on all of this.
Your Honor,
and yet, I would like to finish. And yet, the note in Greeno's chart states, per Dr. Daly's order, no pain medication, no gastroscopy. That certainly would appear to be evidence of a subjective mental component of what we call deliberate indifference, because such an emphatic and denial, blanket denial of medical treatment has a punitive ring to it when it could have so easily been taken care of.
Your Honor, the false assumption in that is that Mr. Greeno had an ulcer in 95.
No, but what Judge Rovner is saying is by the time we get to the date that note was written in the file,
one thing is perfectly clear, which is that all of the things they're doing for Mr. Greeno are ineffective. He's drinking bottles and bottles and bottles of things like Maalox, et cetera. He's continuing to vomit. He's continuing to have pain. He's continuing to have things. He's throwing up all the time. And he's not given the bland diet. And that note is a very disturbing note to read on the basis of what appears in his medical file. Forget about August of 1995. The note comes a little bit later. But the fact is, to absolutely refuse to treat somebody who's observably ill. This is not a mental illness we're talking about, right? This is something with lots of physical manifestations. It's terribly disturbing.
And this is a case where the record does demonstrate that the staff were constantly looking for objective evidence of an ulcer. They put him under observation.
Why didn't they do an endoscopy then if they really thought he had an ulcer?
Because the diagnosis was chronic esophagitis.
You just told me they were constantly looking for evidence of an ulcer. Is that consistent with a firm conviction on their part that he had just reflux disorder?
I think the answer is yes. He had chronic esophagitis.
Don't you think a doctor would worry when a year into a course of treatment, nothing is working, nothing changes, nothing is different?
Well, there were interludes in which, in the record demonstrate, there were interludes in which there were no problems with his stomach. He was doing fine.
That was when they were treating him properly. That short period of time when they were...
They gave him the bland diet and
gave him certain medication. And then he was taken off of all of that, the Prilosec.
Yeah.
Look, we may disagree that the kind of care Mr. Greeno got is not the kind of care you and I would expect in civilian life in a normal hospital. But to elevate what happened here, given this record of observation, prescription, providing counseling on his diet, he was not denied a bland diet. He was told that he could obtain foods in the prison system that would not aggravate his stomach. There were times when he ignored that advice and got tobacco and other materials that only could. They were constantly looking for objective evidence of bleeding in his stomach. They did test after test after test.
Well, if you have
no
an ulcer,
blood.
You don't have to necessarily bleed, does it? I mean, a bleeding ulcer is a more serious form of ulcer, I thought.
Well, it's one of the indicators of an ulcer, and he was given. And as soon as objective evidence came forward in March of 97, that's when the ball started rolling. He was still tested with no blood, but still that one report of the blood on the toilet paper in the toilet triggered a host of actions which only within months resulted in a proper diagnosis and treatment. There is no objective evidence that he had an ulcer in the earlier time.
But that's the wrong question. There's the objective evidence that he's suffering from some sort of gastro problem and that what they're doing isn't fixing it, that they're giving him vast quantities of over-the-counter kind of medications that aren't addressing either the pain or the problem.
I believe,
and the problem is exacerbated by the fact that you have Dr. Lauren, the medical director of Fox Lake, who refuses to send him to a specialist despite noting the possibility of a peptic ulcer, refusing to place him on a bland diet. Continuing to prescribe Maalox, which really exacerbates the illness, and Tagamin, which does the same, despite Greeno's claims that they weren't helping, and telling him, look, learn to live with it, fella. And then you have Dr. Ray, the physician at Jackson Correctional Institution. She refused to refer him for an endoscopy, delayed seeing him for over a month. You've got Dr. Avestruck at Jackson. She ignored his request for an endoscopy. You've got Sharon Bergstaff, the nurse manager. She refuses to respond to requests for appointments, refuses to investigate the possibility of an ulcer, despite again noting possible ulcer, giving Maalox, despite him telling everyone who would listen that it was hurting him, and again telling him to accept and live with your condition.
Your Honor,
you've got such a high hill to climb here.
Except that everything is based on complaints from this prisoner, and there's no objective evidence for anyone to suggest that he's got anything more serious. And I'm not downplaying esophagitis.
Why isn't objective evidence that all of these people... See, we're talking about summary judgment here. We're not talking about the result of a trial. And it seems to me that the sheer number of people who thought it might be an ulcer suggests that there is evidence to suggest that they knew it was an ulcer and they weren't doing anything. Perhaps at a trial you might be able to persuade somebody that nonetheless, despite these notations, it wasn't enough to cross the threshold. So be it. That's what trials are for. But the question here is whether there is a genuine issue of material fact on that point.
And the record is undisputed as to any objective evidence that he had an ulcer.
Undisputed.
There is no objective evidence to refute.
Was there any clear line between having an esophageal ulcer and having an irritated esophagus? I assume that the symptoms must be rather similar, aren't they? You mentioned bleeding, but that's a more exacerbated kind of ulcer.
I'm not a doctor, but I'm not downplaying what esophagitis is. You can have very serious symptoms from it. We've heard about it. Reflux disease. It can be very painful. But that's what the objective evidence was
up until that point. Are the symptoms any different from that as they would be from an ulcer? That's my question.
Well, I leave that to the doctors, and the record shows time and time and time again.
We have to know the answer to some of these questions that can't decide.
See, I really don't understand the distinction that you are trying to make between his complaints about his medical needs and objective evidence of those needs. And let me tell you why. Can a prisoner only validate his medical complaints by demonstrating objective evidence of a medical need? Mr. Greenough is, after all, an adult who was able to communicate that he had chronic pain, excessive heartburn, vomiting. Why is it so important for the defendants to find some objective evidence of a serious condition before referring him for an endoscopy?
Well, that's the problem.
And how can you?
That's right. The objective evidence precisely comes from the medical tests that are done, whether it's blood tests, endoscopies, colonoscopies, what have you.
Temperature, monitoring of weight loss or not.
Well, but the point is, when you deprive somebody of the ability to amass that objective effort, you have to rely on the reports and the observations. Everybody knows he was vomiting. Everybody knows he was in pain. There's no suggestion in this record that he was feigning discomfort. You yourselves have put the limits on how much objective evidence was going to be amassed.
Well, I simply remind the court this is not a medical malpractice case. This is a deliberate indifference case. The record simply does not support criminal recklessness or intent to harm Mr. Greenough. I submit that the record, if you look at this record, time and time again, he was observed, he is examined, he is told what to do and what not to do, time and time again, from 95 all the way through 97, and immediately upon getting finally some evidence that he might have this ulcer, he is properly diagnosed. Up until that time, they believe he's got esophagitis, and they treated him properly for that. They may have been mistaken, but we don't know when that ulcer came about.
Well, they treated him in a way that they themselves saw was making no difference, and they told him, live with it.
Well, I disagree with that.
Well,
I disagree that the record supports a conclusion like that.
That's what they said.
They did it for 28 months. 28 months.
Of from a prisoner who complained of all sorts. The record is replete with all sorts of complaints about back pain.
Well, one has the impression the doctors thought the man was a crock, what is commonly referred to as a crock, that he complained. He had a lot of complaints that had no basis.
But the record also shows they continued to meet with him. They continued to review the reports about his complaints.
The salient fact is they continued to note the possibility of a peptic ulcer.
Well,
and, you know, knowing that whatever it is they were doing there doesn't treat peptic ulcers. It exacerbates peptic ulcers.
I only know of two references to an ulcer, and it's talked about as a possibility among the possibilities of anything that could be the problem with his stomach.
Dr. Lauren? Ms. Bergstad? And, of course, you've got Dr. Daly.
And the record is, let's look out for this. Let's look out to this. But right now our assessment is chronic esophagitis. And it was treated as such. Should we move on?
Sure, if there's anything.
Well, I believe there was another issue the court asked to be briefed, and that was whether the court, district court, erred in stating that he was dismissing the case for failure to state a claim. And as we point out in our brief, it's an unfortunate set of words the court used, but it's pretty clear that in the previous sentence of its order, the court did not dismiss for failure to state a claim, but rather held that it has not been shown that any of the defendants who were health care providers and inmate complaint examiners violated his Eighth Amendment rights. I think it's clear on the a body of that order that the court did not dismiss or fail to state a claim, but rather was granting summary judgment. I invite the court to review the entire medical record, including the findings of fact, the affidavits. I submit there is no record of deliberate indifference, criminal recklessness, or disregard. He was treated. He may have been treated negligently, but it was not deliberate indifference. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Dawson. Ms. Trueblood, how much time? 3 minutes.
I wish you'd tell us what the evidence of deliberate indifference by the people that processed these grievances was.
By the inmate complaint examiners?
Yeah.
And Secretary Sullivan. Those defendants reviewed Mr. Greeno's inmate complaints, and despite their obligation to review the complaints and investigate the complaint, including looking at his medical record and speaking with the medical care providers, they simply denied his complaints and refused to do anything else. This court in Black and Smith decided that an inmate complaint examiner type defendant is involved in the constitutional deprivation just simply by concurring in it and allowing it to happen with their knowledge.
Yeah, but they didn't know the difference between esophagitis and ulcers, did they?
It was their responsibility to look at the record.
Did they have to make a medical examination themselves, or what?
They were responsible for ensuring that the medical care providers did their job and provided.
Well, why isn't that just negligence on their part, you know, as opposed to some deliberate indifference?
There is certainly an issue for trial here with
laziness
regard to whether or not.
Or
I'm sorry?
It's just laziness, negligence, whatever.
It's certainly not clear from the record what exactly their role was. There's certainly a question of fact that they did knowingly disregard Mr. Greeno's medical symptoms. His medical record that stated that they needed to rule out an ulcer was certainly available for them to see. And having imputed knowledge of the standard that they were held to, they had an obligation to ensure that Mr. Greeno was provided with appropriate medical treatment. Now, that issue has been more fully briefed in our briefs, and we submitted certainly a question for trial. Mm-hmm. Certainly, there is more than one question for trial in this case. As this court has indicated, there is a number of notations in the medical record that show that Mr. Greeno was suffering from an objectively serious condition, and the defendants did nothing. They just continued treatment that they knew to be ineffective, and they knew it did work, and they refused to continue that treatment. The standard is not whether the defendants ignored Mr. Greeno. The standard is whether they knew of a substantial risk to his health and disregarded that risk. Here, there is certainly enough evidence in the record to send this case to a jury to decide that at trial with the benefit of counsel for Mr. Greeno. Counsel was not appointed at the summary judgment stage, and that was error. Mr. Greeno was not able to fully develop the record by himself. There were no experts retained for Mr. Greeno's case. In this case, the defendants actually invite expert testimony in their opening brief and in their first of their two response briefs. So if there are no further questions, this court should reverse for trial.
Thanks to both counsel, Ms. Trueblood, Mr. Dawson, and the case will be taken under